WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively back in Baltimore. I don't know whether to call this guy mayor, governor, Mr. O'Malley.
Author.
He's got smarter government and all that
Excellency
stuff.
Excellency would be just fine.
You know, we don't like to time or date ourselves here at Baltimore Positive. When I put this together, I pictured the Friday before the AFC Championship.
You and me both, man.
Downtown, we're going to bring Martin O'Malley. Well, we're not going to talk football today.
But we will run this during the Super Bowl week, pretending we were there.
And although I was, it's not in the book, but I was undefeated in executive Super Bowl play.
So there's the issue. There you go.
Governor.
All right. Well, you know, at this rate, you're on to private citizenship at this point. We'd love to welcome you to Baltimore
Thank
Positive.
You.
We're almost a year into this, and I said to Don, you know, we're gonna work into these things. We had Dutch and Barbara early on. Take us a little while to get to you. As we go through this thing, just where the country is and where the city is, every day, I think the questions for you get a little smarter as we go to say we're closer to an election. We got a lot of things going on here in Baltimore. And here you come with smarter government. So I think I've gone to the top today to get some information.
Thank you. I was lucky to have learned from some really, really smart people who befriended me, came to my aid, joined my cabinet.
Start with that, Governor. Who were some of those folks?
Well, the guy who was really the guy who came to Baltimore on his very last project on this earth was a man named Jack Maple. And I talk about Jack in the book.
The commish, right?
He was the deputy commissioner of police at the NYPD. I had seen what the NYPD was doing with CompStat, performance measured policing, you know, using technologies that a lot of us think have been here forever, especially if we're under 30, things like geographic information systems, you know, the location technology that allows you to see where the Uber car exactly is. All of that was new 20 years ago. And Jack harnessed that in order to transform the New York Police Department so that instead of deploying based on where crime had happened last year, they were deploying based on where crime had happened yesterday. They created a regular cadence of accountability, focusing on the latest emerging truth. They called it CompStat, and its four elements: timely, accurate information shared by all, rapid deployment of resources, effective tactics and strategy, relentless follow-up. Was the program I campaigned on when I ran for mayor, won all six council districts, including the council districts of my two African-American opponents on the east side and the west side.
There's Lawrence Bell and Carl
Lawrence
Stokes.
Lawrence Bell and Carl Stokes. And we not only, I was able to recruit Jack Maple to come to Baltimore, but here's the two interesting facts a little known about that. Number one, when Jack agreed to come to Baltimore and help us reform policing, including policing our police, which is critically important, and I hope we talk about that, because you can't improve public safety without being willing to police the police. But Jack also saw that he had in me a willing disciple of this new way of governing who, for the first time, wanted to take Jack's innovation in New York and bring it enterprise-wide for a whole city. Because Giuliani didn't do that. He tried it, dabbled in it a little bit in transportation, dabbled a little bit in it in sanitation, but they did not sustain it. Here in Baltimore, we called it CityStat 311. So we put, for the first time, one call for all city services, 311 on the front end.
I'm reading the book, and I apologize. I apologize for interrupting, but that part, and you know, I think I followed it pretty closely. I was actually surprised. You were the first mayor to put the 311. I think people think it's been there forever, and that wasn't true, right?
Yeah, that was a new thing. We had thought that 311 was a good way to alleviate the amount of calls that were coming, the 911 emergency
number. Which is still a problem.
That weren't really emergencies.
Right.
So that's what a lot of us were looking at 311 for in the 90s. But and truthfully, Chicago was the first to do 311, but they did not have that common platform of the GIS or the regular, you know, recurring meetings that were the essence of CityStat. You know, the courage to courage and discipline. The discipline is to actually have the meetings, get everybody in the room for one blessed hour of the week. You know, Don, from being county executive, your whole damn day is a meeting. It's a never-ending series of meetings, and yet so few of us actually take the time to convene our people.
Few of them are really in-depth, too, right? They're, you're saying they're meetings, but they're not not the kind of meetings you're talking about here.
It's not like a cabinet meeting, weekly reader, everybody go around the room and say two nice things about what you guys are doing.
We're going to measure stuff.
We're measuring stuff, and we're going to have the courage, and this is where the courage comes in. It's the discipline to have that a recurring schedule of those focused meetings around real goals, but it's the courage to ask the question, is what we're doing working or not? Whatever about our intentions, whatever about, you know, how much we might have hoped that we'd get better results, if we're not getting them, let's be honest and let's ask each other, you know, is it working or is it not?
And then you have to change it.
Yeah, and you have to change.
Well, change. Adapting,
changing. Well, right. Getting inside the turning radius of the problem before the problem gets inside the turning radius of your response.
Well, we jumped right into the book, and my guess
I'll hold
is
it up here.
Smarter Government, available in bookstores and on Amazon, right? Wherever folks can get your book, selling very, very well.
And give it at least a four-line review, would you? Because otherise the algorithm
Can I say something here? This picture of where you are, you see that? That is literally 5 feet from where I proposed to my wife.
Aww.
I proposed to my wife right on the bench, right at the top.
We should have had the governor sign it on the front then.
Yeah, that's Federal Hill.
That is Federal Hill.
One of my favorite spots in Baltimore. After Fort McHenry.
I'm already anticipating we're going to have the governor back because we have so many topics. We've jumped right into the book. You talk about CityStat, CompStat, which became CityStat, which later became StateStat. But let's go back to CityStat, because one of the things that jumped out at me in the book, and I love it when a book makes you say, oh yeah, you know, and I'm checking and I'm circling and I'm highlighting. This whole issue that you raise about asking questions, digging down with questions, asking five questions. Talk us through about the importance of asking questions.
Sure. Usually we're all so busy doing our jobs that we don't have the time to talk with each other about how we might do them better. And the CityStat process, and then StateStat, and hopefully we talk about the Chesapeake Bay, which mm-hmm. I think, which is actually my favorite chapter to write in the book. You have to at least slow down long enough, not just to ask the one question, but to ask the follow-up questions so that you can get at the real root cause of the problem. For example, Joe Kolodziejski was the best sanitation solid waste guy I think any mayor ever had. So Joe, lifelong Baltimore, worked hard every day, played even when he was injured or having a bad day. You know,
he was a gamer.
Yeah, he was a gamer. He was like the Cal Ripken of solid waste.
You wanted
guys.
Him on the team at Gonzaga.
Yeah, and so early on in the CityStat process, Joe complained at one of the meetings when he was standing up there. He said, you know, it's a real challenge to make these improvements, Mr. Mayor, or Mr. Deputy Mayor, and writer Matt Gallagher, the CityStat director. We're all there as a team, kind of in a circular fashion in the room. And I said, well, Joe, what's the biggest impediment you have? I mean, why can't we make faster progress? He says, unexcused absences in the workforce. I said, unexcused absences. And that does, he says, well, that drives up the overtime I have to spend, so I can't bring the overtime. It means people are working areas they're not familiar with because I have to shift them around. So unexcused absences. And I said, okay, Joe, well, second, why? Why is it that you have so many unexcused
because
absences?
Because you could stop there, right? Oh, unexcused absences.
Okay, well, that's an excuse. Right. An excuse is as good as work.
Right.
Sometimes in Baltimore, sadly, among really smart people, having 10 excuses for why you can't is almost as good as actually getting it done.
Right.
I don't think that cuts it with most people, but in some... So yes, the second why. Well, why is that, Joe? Well, because we have a lot of addiction problems. For a lot of people, the sanitation job is their first job as they're coming out of prison or... out of an addiction, so that's why. Well, when was the last time you ever wrote somebody up for an unexcused absence?
Yeah, I love that part.
Well, we don't generally do it. Why? Third why. Well, because it's really hard under the labor contract. I don't have to write a memo in that meeting to the labor commissioner. He's sitting right next to me. Labor commissioner, what do you have to do? Well, I have to write. It's not hard, Mary. You have to write people up twice. Third time, you can fire them. Back to Joe. All right, Joe. Well, why is
it? You love this.
Why is it that you don't write people up? He says, well, because even when we do, it doesn't matter anyway. Fifth why. Why, Joe? He said, well, because the finance department eliminates the permanent position in my budget, and then I have to backfill with a temporary. who's less reliable than the guy that had a lot of unexcused absences.
Are we sure that he'll be less reliable, the next guy?
So then I turn to Peggy Watson. That's another why. So then I turn to Peggy Watson, our finance director. I don't have to write her a memo. She's sitting at the same table. Peggy, is that true? Oh, Mr. Mayor, that can't be true, I don't think. Well, really, Peggy, you don't think or it can't be true? She said, I can find out by the next meeting. I suspect that probably that might have been true to close out one fiscal year for the last month, but that can't be the rule now. 2 weeks later, we're back. Guess what? Somebody was taking notes on what people committed to answering for Joe, for his operation, and what he committed to answering for us and our interests. And so we asked Peggy, Peggy, did you run that one to ground? She said, well, yes, Mayor, I did it. And sadly, you know, in government, sometimes there's two speeds, on and off. Well, we flicked the switch to on, if you will, to enforce a rule that you couldn't, that we eliminated those permanent positions, in fact, for a couple months at the end of one fiscal year. I said, how many years ago? She said, 4 years ago. I said, oh, my goodness. And nobody turned it back off. So those are some of the rules. Why is that important? Because it wasn't just for Joe's office or Joe's department. Every department in government had stopped, you know, enforcing the, you know, what Woody Allen said, 90% of life is just showing up. Our government had stopped enforcing the rules for 90% of life.
Well, we began this thing a year ago. He said in order to run government, Don said this, you have to have a hatred of incompetence. And I think...
Well, Nancy Pelosi says we don't hate anybody.
Right. Incompetence.
You have to have a healthy impatience and intolerance.
That's a better way to put it.
There was a part of that, and I guess where we are now.
I apologize to Sister John Verbuff for the hate.
That's fine.
I take
that
back.
Incompetence. It's a thing, not a person. So for you with this mayor's race and watching this unfold 20 years later, and Don and I were green rooming before you got here. A lot of the issues are similar, the same, recurring. Where are you in all of this and what the city would need now, aside from writing a book that would help the next mayor or anyone to say, this is my experience, but you've been lauded and you've been, I don't want to use hated, but certainly, you know, both sides of that. We were here, incidentally, before the first person that walked in came up and gave you a hug.
Young African-American man.
I wanted a picture with you.
And called me mayor.
Called me mayor. You're the best mayor ever. You're the best mayor ever.
And I'm sure you've heard both sides of all of that.
I think that young man was probably, he was probably like 7 years old when I was mayor.
Exactly.
Maybe this is fair then. So he was in his early 20s.
Go ahead. I don't want to say it and be self-promotion. He did say you were the best mayor.
He said you were the best mayor.
But I'm sure you get that.
I get that a lot.
I know you've had the other side of that, and there's been highs and lows.
I don't get it in wealthy neighborhoods, but I do get it in the vast majority of neighborhoods.
How can the next mayor have someone who's now 7 in third grade, 20 years from now, you'll still be a young guy, I'll be a little older, we could get together, and the next mayor could be standing in the new Lexington Market 20 years from now and have somebody come and say, you helped fix my city. You're one of the reasons I'm still alive, literally.
The one problem that's holding Baltimore back is the same problem that I was elected to attack in 1999, and that is the problem of violent crime and drug addiction. I mean, they are intertwined, and to pretend that they're not is just that. It's pretend. So I didn't write this to make money. I wrote it because I learned a lot from other people, and I want to share it with those who step up and carry the baton forward in this longitudinal experiment of self-governance. And the chapters in here on public safety, chapter 4, I think, is on CompStat, chapter 5 on what we did in Baltimore in 1999, and forward for the next 10 years. You know, very little reported, and I think never gaining a headline in the Sun, was that Baltimore led the nation in the rate of reduction of Part 1 crime, that is to say property and violent crime, from 2000 to 2009. And it was because we did things that actually worked, including including not only improving policing, but improving how we police the police, additional and more effective options for drug treatment, and earlier interventions in the lives of young people who were otherwise recruited as boy soldiers into these ruthless drug gangs and groomed to become hitmen. So my hope in this mayoral race is that someone will rise to act that actually has the courage to speak honestly about public safety and the actions, tactics, and strategies required to improve it, not just in wealthy neighborhoods, not just in yuppie neighborhoods where the developers are building the high-rise condos, but in all neighborhoods. Every citizen right. in our city deserves to be able to sit on their front stoop on a nice summer night without worrying that a gunfire on the corner is going to kill their granddaughter.
Right, riding a bike in front of that row home.
Yeah, and that's the... A lot of people from outside of Baltimore, sort of national politicians covering the mayor's race when I was running, said, oh, this isn't going to end well. That's a white guy promising to crack down on crime. What they missed in their, you know, cookie-cutter story that they came to town with was that for most of the people in the toughest areas of our cities who had to experience declining property values, declining safety, burying their sons
all
and their
all
cousins.
The things that we have six blocks away, except burying my son, and I don't want that, you know, I don't yeah. want that to be next. I mean, declining property, all of these issues from 20 years ago, I still look back and people come up and hug you and say you were the best, and then you get criticized for how the policing worked or the notion well, that a kid smoking a joint 20 years yeah, ago wound up going to jail.
Well, let's deal
right?
with that. Let's deal with yeah. that. I want to jump
and that's
right
a
in.
More modern phenomenon. Right. If I could just conclude
sure.
the other
oh, sure.
thought.
I'm sorry.
No. The what people miss about 1999 was that people who had to live with crime and being told that there was nothing we could do about it, we're sick and tired of being sick and tired. And the public, the social justice call that so many responded to in our city was that we're all in this together. There's no such thing as a spare American in our neighborhood. We're not writing off any neighborhoods. And while we wouldn't tolerate open-air drug markets 24/7 in Guilford or Ashburton,
right.
we're not going to tolerate them in Middle East or Rosemont or other neighborhoods. We're all in this together. We all deserve a certain level of public safety, and people supported it, but they also supported it for another reason, Nestor, and that was we did what we said we were going to do to control police excesses, excessive force, discourtesy. The lowest 7 years of police-involved shootings in modern Baltimore history were the 7 years that I served as mayor.
Why is that?
Because we did a much better job of policing the police, retaining qualified supervisors,
what does that
improving
mean? I'm gonna
training.
I'm going to push you back on that, because one of the things we try to do is to drill down.
Good.
Because a number of the mayoral candidates have talked about that issue as well, and we've had them all on, and we've got a couple more coming on the next week or two. Policing the police. Here's what it seems to me, and you dealt with consent decrees. That
actually, I never had a consent decree under me, but certainly dealt with the issues of the way that racial injustice has been intertwined with law enforcement
right.
since our country's founding.
Yeah,
so absolutely
right.
dealt with that.
Walk us through that. How do we make, we asked Commissioner Harrison this, how do we make police officers feel supported at the same time, and I think the word they're using now at their governor is constitutional policing. How do we make police officers feel supported at the same time recognizing that there has to be a connection between communities and police officers? Kevin Kamenetz, our friend, you say all the time, we got nothing if we don't have trust,
right, trust.
Between our community and the police. We can't have public
trust
safety.
Trust is essential.
So
huge
how
word.
Do, how do we make that happen?
Yeah, there's a guy who wrote a book, Stephen Covey, called The Speed of Trust. The progress only happens at the speed of trust, and that's so true when it comes to policing. So keep in mind, the very last week of the campaign, a jumbo postcard went out from one of my opponents with a picture of Rodney King having the crap beaten out of him on the front of it. And it said, are you ready for zero tolerance? And when you turned it over, it was my white face and my pointed Irish ears looking right at you. There were radio ads with recognizable African-American leaders in East and West Baltimore saying, we're all going to be afraid to sit on our stoops if Martin O'Malley is elected mayor. No city had elected a white mayor that was a majority African-American city. It was a different thing. It was pre-Obama. So I say all of that background because the light was very bright and intense
right.
in terms of delivering on the promise of not only policing, but improving how we police the police. And these were the things succinctly that we did. They were different from what we did before, and almost all of them were dismantled in the second term of Stephanie Rawlings Blake.
How many commissioners did you have during your tenure as mayor?
The first one resigned at my request after 58 days. And then I had Ed Norris until he abandoned ship mm-hmm. and went to Governor Ehrlich's administration 2 years later. And then I had Kevin Clark for approximately 2.5 years. And then I finished out with Leonard Hamm. So okay.
four
of the 7 years, I appointed four, three of whom
were
there.
It's a lot of turnover, right?
Some would say that. It's not as many generals as Lincoln, no. and he was fighting a much broader
right,
battle.
Right.
So let me get back to your question, Kenny Executive. Succinctly, here are a handful of the things we did to police the police.
There we go.
Wasn't done before, and they stopped doing it here in the city in the second term of Stephanie Rawlings Blake and Police Commissioner Batts. We increased staffing for the Internal Affairs Division. May sound like a little thing, but every department ideally should dedicate 5% of their force to internal affairs, that is, going after complaints of corruption or other police misbehavior. Secondly, we started tracking and posting online the discourtesy, excessive force complaints from the police department. I believe we even got to a point of aggregating them by district. We didn't put the particular complainant or particular officer, but we did have the total number, and we posted it so citizens could see whether crime, discourtesy and excessive force complaints were going up or going down.
Tied into your commitment to open data, which
gotta
you talk about throughout the book.
And to your observation about the essence of trust. Without openness and transparency. That openness and transparency
right.
are the opening ante
throughout the book.
In the game of trust.
It's a theme, folks. Constant theme in this book.
Third, we paid not only our police officers a lot more, 7, 8, and 9% increase, but we also had step increases in order to retain your most qualified lieutenants and sergeants, because they're really your safeguard against corruption or excessive force. Fourth, we created a civilian review board, and we actually gave it, for the first time, its own independent detectives who had the ability to go wherever they were called by any citizen anywhere to follow up on a complaint independent of the police department, because a lot of times citizens don't believe the police will do anything about it, because for about 200 years of our history, they were right. Fifth, we eliminated the backlog of trial boards, that is, adjudications for complaints against officers who misbehave. Why is that important? Because justice delayed is justice denied, and something happens if you have a one-year lag between when a citizen makes a complaint and when the complaint is resolved and goes to a hearing, and that is that a certain small number of officers will do retaliatory and intimidating things to the complainant, the complainant's family, and in order to make that complaint against the officer go away. And we had a huge backlog in internal disciplinary cases. We greatly reduced those so that there was more certainty in that. We also promised to do 100 reverse integrity stings a year. What is a reverse integrity sting? That's when you call out a complaint of a man dealing drugs on a corner wearing a bright red jacket, and then you videotape it and see how the officer behaves when, in fact, he pulls up on that corner, which he was called to by an undercover complaint from an undercover internal affairs officer. He gets out on the corner and he sees a person on the corner who doesn't have a bright red jacket, but the officer nonetheless gets out of the car, turns him around, puts him up against the wall, and then pulls a baggie of heroin out of the officer's pocket and plants it on the black suspect.
Gun trace task force type stuff.
And that actually happened early on,
right.
And when we first started doing these reverse integrity stings, and you have to own that. Short-term hit, really embarrassing, not a fun press conference to have to stand beside your police commissioner and take the responsibility for it. However, it made neighbors understand, wow, we'd never seen that before.
Yeah, right,
and this wasn't something the feds came in and caught for us. This was something O'Malley and our mayor, the guy I voted for last time, or voted against last time anyway, our city government's actually doing this. So we did about 100 integrity stings a year.
On people you suspected to be, maybe?
It was a combination. Part of them were random. Half of them were random, and half of them were targeted.
Now, that never gets, I mean, and
again, I never heard that story.
I don't want to pick on the media or
Chapter 5.
The media or the net. That part.
You remember it because
it's reported.
Right.
And here's what I'm
right now. Yeah, and that's what breaks my heart.
We're learning
the wrong lesson.
I was going to ask you, and before we go to a break and then come back, so much to talk about. And again, for those of you listening on the radio, with
former mayor, former governor
Martin O'Malley. Great book, terrific book, Smarter Government, Democrat, Republican, Independent. You'll learn a lot in this book.
Baltimore.
Here's the question.
Here's the question.
People will say, and it's certainly, I think, coming front and center with probably now because of Bloomberg as well, you couldn't govern, you couldn't run this. People say to me all the time, I know you're friends with the governor. I know you like the mayor. You couldn't govern her. I admit he got things under control. Crime was better. You couldn't do it the way Martin did it today. What do you say to them?
No, I disagree. I run into people all over the city that say, why can't we just do what we did before? Why can't we reduce crime?
Why can't we?
I think we've had a failure of leadership for quite a few years in Baltimore. I mean, it's remarkable. I mean, the ends of three mayors in a row who each came in with great promise and each left with great disappointment. We also have something else, and you'll remember the Believe campaign that we ran years ago. You know, I didn't get sworn into office and immediately put up posters saying Believe. That Believe campaign only started running about a year and 2 months after we had been in office. I had had my team together with some shakeups and some changes. But we could only run those ads and that call to action based on that belief after we had had a solid year of progress. When I first ran, I said, vote for me, and in 6 months, 10 of these open-air drug markets will be shut down. And in fact, we did. I said, vote for me and together we'll reduce violent crime. And by the end of the first year, we had driven homicides under 300 for the first time in like 20 years.
And you had the data.
And more importantly, I had the eyes of our neighbors who saw that things were getting better. And I said we would police the police. And in fact, we did. And people knew it because of those reverse integrity stings happening. And it was only after having that credibility that we could then ask people to believe again in Baltimore. Now, sir, what Baltimore suffers from most is a chronic condition of disbelief. The so-called smart, so-called wealthy people, black and white in our city, think that having 10 reasons for why we're incapable of doing anything is almost as good as actually doing it. And so we just have a low amount of belief and trust in our neighbors who are not like us or live in neighborhoods far from ours. We have a lack of trust in our institutions. We have a lack of trust. We have a lack of, Ben, it stems from a lack of belief that we can get anything done. Isn't it remarkable that no one in Baltimore would tell you, man, we have the best bankers, lawyers, artists, musicians in the world? No one will tell you that. But many of the so-called smart people in Baltimore are quick to tell you, man, we have the smartest drug dealers and hitmen in all of America. Oh, my goodness. They must feed, you know, and they must drink from a Superman well because our drug dealers and our hitmen are just so smart.
Different than everybody else in every other city.
Different. Oh,
so different.
Yeah, it's bullshit.
Well, well, with that, perfect time to take a break. I want to thank our sponsors, Fadley's, Jennings, State Fair, Center of Maryland. We've got Governor Martin O'Malley. We're talking smarter government, Nestor. What do you think?
I'm going to read it. We'll step out. We'll take a break. We're at Fadley's. We got a lot more with Governor, Mayor, and neighbor, Martin O'Malley. We're back for more from Fadley's in Lexington Market. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and WNST Towson, Baltimore. Back for more after this.